Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode contains scenes which are not suitable for children and which some listeners may find distressing. This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
I don't know, I'd been to school I had, and when I came out of school, he wasn't there. So I waited that night for him to come to collect me. About 3 o'clock and he never came. And I was waiting and waiting and waiting, and he never came. And I knew something was wrong because he always came. He always came to get me. So I didn't know what was after happening. So for about 2 or 3 days, there was nothing. The phone didn't ring. I kept ringing the phone, and the phone kept ringing. And then I remember thinking, if they're after getting caught, I better stop ringing the phone. I cycled up to the house, and they went. There was nobody there. There used to be a key around the back beside the bedroom window, underneath the oak. There was no key there to let me in the back door. So what I done every night was, is for the 3 days, I got out of bed, like I'd delivering the milk, and I was going to the houses to check was the milk being delivered, because I wasn't sure what was after happening. So then I knew there was definitely something wrong because he wasn't delivering the milk. It wasn't that he just wasn't coming to collect me, because I remember at the time thinking, well, maybe he just doesn't want me to walk anymore. So I kind of, in a way, I was thinking I was getting a get out of jail card for you. I kind of thought he moved on like to somebody else. That sounds terrible, but being serious, I kind of thought it was done, game over. And then it was grand, and then I'd been going to school for 3 days, so I think it was the longest I'd went to school in such a long time. And I came home, I had my dinner, and Mal was there, Noel, they were all there, yeah. And then the door went, and I thought it was one of my friends or something at the door, and I ran out the door, and next minute he was just standing there with a big smile on his face like nothing had happened.
This is The Witness, in his own words. Episode 4, The Big Time.
Part of me was kind of gutted because I thought, I knew he was back for me, if that made sense. I don't think you'd understand. For them 3 days, I was probably the longest I'd been away from him in such a long time. So that was like a holiday. It was like amazing. I was normal for 3 days. The phone hadn't rang. The mobile phone wasn't ringing. I had no coke. I was going to school for 3 days. But for them 3 days, that may seem stupid to you, but to me, that was just mad. And I was going home every day, getting me dinner on, getting me clothes on. And it was always in the back of my mind, where is he? What's going on? I was afraid, thinking. But then when I was going out checking, the milk wasn't there. I didn't know what was after happening. So I was just kind of just holding me there, really, until I found out. And then, big smile on his face, came in. I think he talked to me and my ma for a few minutes. Said, I think he said something about Rita being sick or something. There was some story. Grabbed me coat and said, are you ready to go? I said, yeah. And I said to my ma, see you during the week. When I'm back. And we got into the car. And when I got into the car, that was it. It wasn't like he was at the door. He was literally said, we're fucked. We're after being caught. They arrested me dad, fuming over them, arresting his dad. Got everything. Apparently what happened, Billy was in the house, and the two Peters went in, Peter Kerr and Peter Joyce. The guards had been watching. Brian had obviously went to Clondalkin, caught the smack, was bringing it into the house, and then when the four of them were in the house, they went in after them and caught them all. Asked me, did the police come here? I was like, no one's come near me. He asked me, had they raided my ma? And all, obviously not, my ma would have told you. And he was like, you didn't say to anybody? And I was like, I didn't tell anybody anything. He took the phone. I remember them going through the phone. They were all over the place. The house was obviously gone in Drumcondra. The game was up. They were all after being charged. Brian's dad, Billy, was charged. And so was Kenny. His house was raided. All their houses were raided. Brian's dad's house was raided. So the ma was obviously going through the roof because all of Collins Avenue were going to be seeing the guards going through our front door. And from the get-go, he was devastated. He was absolutely devastated. They were all devastated. They were all shitting. And there was one thing he knew he wasn't going to do, was jail. And he was determined, no matter what, we had to get him out of jail. Yeah, he was freaked. And straight away, it was just operation. Get off these charges.
And what was your reaction when you found out that they'd been arrested? Like,
well, I was terrified. I was just, I couldn't believe it. And part of me, I was like, oh, I was just glad they didn't come to my house and get me or get me mad, do you get me? And I was afraid for him as well then, because I didn't want him to go to jail. I don't know why I didn't want him to go to jail, but I just didn't want him to go to jail. Because I don't know, the way things, like, I don't know, I didn't know what to do. I just done what I was told, and I didn't want him to go to jail. Like, he was crying and all. So the whole plan then was, he was giving up guns and he was giving up cars, robbed cars, and he was robbing stuff and leaving them in fields. And certain guards were going and getting them to make the charges disappear. That's what he was saying was happening. When he was doing the robberies and robbing the cars and armed robberies, cash in transit, TNT, trucks with smokes, alcohol, anything we got our hands on. We robbed a lorry load of chicken one night. We robbed a lorry load of nappies. We went to Nestle. He robbed a truck load of Nestle chocolate. You name it. If it wasn't screwed down, he'd take it. If it was screwed down, he'd still take it. He trained me. He learned me how to rob cars, creep houses, break locks. He'd burn locks off factories. He'd set the alarm off. The fella would come and we'd put our own lock onto it then. And then when the fella would go again, we'd open the factory up and let ourselves in. And he'd make us rob everything in it. He'd take anything. Jet skis. At one time, I think there was 3 jet skis, 2 boats, 3 or 4 mobile homes. We just went up to Betty's Town or whatever and hooked him up and drove off to the road. He didn't give a fuck. He felt like he was invincible. As he said, he was saying he'd friends in the guard. He could get away with anything. He felt like he just had free run of the place.
Were other people in your life, like your mother and Niall and other people around you, like, were they aware of what had happened there?
They weren't aware until it was in the papers. Yeah. The trial didn't happen until about 2 years later. We'd stopped selling the heroin. We were just robbing everything because he wanted to rob as much things as he could to give to the guards to try and get off these charges. And then my ma came up to the house. And my ma wanted to know what was going on, like. And he was like, we made a mistake. It happens in life. I'm mortified, my whole family. He was saying his family was embarrassed. He brought shame on everybody and all. And he changed his ways and everything. And I remember my ma asked me, did I want to come home? She thought I should come home. And I was like, no, ma, I can't. Like, I'm happy here. Like, I said, that happened a few years ago, like. She came loads of times. She met Rita. She sat down with Rita and wanted to know what was going on. And Rita told her everything was all right. I was happy. She was happy. It was just the way it was. I couldn't risk that happening to my ma and my sisters. He thinks he's gone to jail. He's in the house. He calls me into the front porch and he starts crying. And it was just me and him. And he was crying. I said, why are you crying? He says, because I don't want to go to jail. And I said, I don't want you to go to jail. And he said, if I go to jail, you're going to have to look after the house and look after Rita and the kids. And I was like, well, how am I meant to look after Rita? In my head, I was thinking, how am I meant to look after? I always look after the house because I've done everything on the yard. I cleaned the yard, fed the dogs, I painted the shed, I painted the house. That's what I always done, the chores anyways. Like, cut the grass. They were just normal things. But he said, you're going to have to. But I was thinking, oh, these gangsters are going to come up and eat me alive. Like, what are you want to hear? Like, how am I meant to fight all these off? Like, because these had to be running amok, ratting on everybody. He was telling on everybody, trying to get off of the charges. So he was convinced he was going to jail. He didn't think he'd done enough. Boy, he got the 5-year suspended sentence. Came home, partied, done cocaine, done drugs all night, heroin the lot. And that was it then, straight away back to business. The shed, you probably could have fit 15, 16 cars in it. And then we built a big wall connecting the shed to the house. So we turned it into a compound. It was just a cottage. And then we made the rest, if that makes sense. We built the rest around it. He was robbing everything around us, we were robbing. And he was filling the shed up with stuff. And he was getting a reputation. And everyone knew he was actually selling heroin. So, and he'd have us going around fingers, doing handbreakers, getting chased off police up and down Capra Road. So everybody was talking about us. We're saying everybody knew we'd built a shed. Everyone could see there was a big compound. Like, so he was starting to get a name for himself. So he started getting close with Fat Puss. And Fat Puss turned around and says to him, and the big fella Marlo wants to meet you. And Brian, like, was this was like him winning an Oscar. Like, to him it was the big time. Like, Marlo Hoyland was the top dog. Like,
so when you first met Marlo Hoyland, how much of an awareness did you have of who he was?
And everyone knew who he was. Everyone knew Marlo was the boss.
He would have been the most significant player in gangland crime at that time.
PJ George was running Finglas, running the drugs around Finglas for a long time. And that's who Marlo Hoyland used to work for.
He was a guy who had buried men alive. And Marlo took him on and took him out, took his patch and made it bigger.
Well, everyone knew Marlo was the top dog. He was involved with everyone. He had this stuff coming in from Spain, from all the people that you read about now. He was dealing with all them. He was dealing with your man Eamon Kelly and that later got shot dead by the IRA. Everyone, he was terrified. Everyone was terrified of him.
He was at the very top of the ladder. He was hands off. He was somebody who took a cut from every deal that went down, from every robbery.
Never done any work himself. Never got his hands dirty. He was the brains.
He wanted cash, money, so as he could buy larger consignments all the time of drugs. And in Brian, he saw a useful criminal who would have been willing to probably do anything for him, but who came with a pedigree in armed robbery and also a storage facility. That's what he saw in Brian. Brian, of course, was blown away by the attention, but ultimately, Marlo saw him as being useful and nothing else.
So I didn't think I was going, and then he told me to get into the car. We were going. We went down to the Kappa house. We went in. There was a fellow called Shakur Dillon sitting at a stool at the door, and it's just Marlo Hoyland staring at us. And I'm like, for fuck's sake, in my head, thinking it's going to be bleeding more here. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen. Like, I thought, what are we, like, what are we doing? Like, I'm standing there. Yeah, before we went, he was actually giving me about 4 or 5 lines of coke. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, so without me nut, like, standing there looking at him. And he told Marlo, turned around and said, he said, who's the young fella? He said, oh, it's the lips. He's like, my son, he is. And he said, I don't like talking around young fellas. He said, no, I trust him with me life forward. And I was standing there and I was just like rocking back and forward, just looking at him. He tells us to sit down. And Marlo turns to me and he says, don't really like talking in front of you, but I've heard a lot about you. And I heard you've been getting up the loads, up in the shed up there, been running amok. And he said to Brian, I'm sorry to hear about what happened to you with the heroin getting caught, blah, blah, blah. But you know yourself, if you need that, I'll sort it out for you. And he says to me, how do I know I can trust you? I says, because I've never told anybody in my life. And he said, put your hand on the table. And I remember looking at Brian. By doing that, my fingers were hanging over the table, so I thought he was going to break them. And I put my hand on the table. I think he wanted to see, was I afraid? Like, so I put my hand on the table. And then everything went quiet, and then he just started laughing and grabbed me and gave me a hug. Says, I want your money, mess with you, I'm nice young fella. And he turns around and says, get everyone drinks. And he says, what do you want? The lips, I said, I'll have a Coke. He says, no, you won't. The lips, I'll have a Bulmers. And then the next minute, then he just started talking about doing business, saying, listen, we need someone to help us doing the armed robberies. And so he's talking to Kenny. We heard you have the shed, we could use the shed. We heard you are up to all sorts up there, and we were looking to do business. Like, and he said, if you want to get back into the smack game, I'm gonna look after you. We that was it. Then we had a few lines of coke, a few drinks, and then we left. On the way back in the car, Brian was absolutely delighted. He was jumping up and down. He was so excited. He was like, we've done it now. We've made the big time, Joey. This is it, the lips. All this. He just tell us anything we need, and we need, he's going to get a sword. We have Marlo Hyland backing and all. He thought he was fucking invincible then. He thought this was it. Like, if we're getting here, like, this is us set for life. Yeah, he had pneumonia, he died in his sleep. The drink probably killed him early, but they said it was pneumonia, he died in his sleep, so it's quite difficult. I kind of lost the relationship. I had a great relationship with Mila, but once he moved to Blanchard, I kind of lost it. It was never the same. And I kind of think that's what I seen on Brian. I'd seen a father figure, and then he obviously took advantage. He could see, people say he seen me vulnerability and he used that, but he definitely swooped in once my dad was gone.
And have your sort of feelings towards your dad changed at all over the years as you've kind of come to see what his relationship was like with your mother, you know?
I've got a lot more compassion towards my mom, because I didn't realise, because I didn't see it, because I was only a baby. I seen it happen to me ma later on in life. By a later part, I seen her being beat up. I only have good memories of my ma and dad together, because they were friends. When I was there, they were friends. And she never bad-mouthed them. She never told us these things. The rest knew because they were older, but she never done that with me. I was the baby, like, I was the youngest, so I was kind of sheltered from that. And I seen Dad giving the older ones a slap, but he never hit me. Has my opinion changed towards him? Is that what you're asking me? Yeah, I think what he done was wrong, yeah. Still my dad, still love him, but do I agree with what he done? No, I don't. It's not right. Let's not fuck about, like, my dad was an abuser. Do you understand? Like, I'm not going to sit here and say he wasn't. He was just in a different way. Yeah, he beat women, and he was, what he done was wrong, and like, he abused me, man. I think a lot of people do is they say, well, that happened in my childhood, so it's okay that I do it. An excuse. It's not. I don't think it's an excuse. I think that's a cop-out. Like, my dad said his dad battered his man, so it's all right for him to batter my man. So, everything Brian Kennedy done to me, I should go and do it to somebody else. Is that how the world's meant to work? No, it's not. It's ridiculous. It's a cop-out. It doesn't make any excuse. The last time I seen my dad was in the morgue, and my mass like give you that kiss. Now if I get in my life, it was freezing. I didn't understand why it was cold. And I gave him a kiss on the cheek and it was cold. Baltic, I'll never forget. And he was just lying there. And then the funeral happens. We go to the shanty pub and never go home after that. Well, like Mitchelstown Cottage becomes my home, basically. Permanently. Called me into the toilet and he said to me, I'm going to go out here now and you're going to tell your ma you want to come and stay with me because you're upset and you're going to sit back walking. You're going to get a weekly wage and I'm going to say it to her and you're going to agree. So he went outside, where I sat down, gave it a few minutes. He said to me, ma, he seems very upset, which I was upset. And then I followed his lead. He told me, man, it was August. My dad died. It was the summer. I remember it was lovely. It was the summer. The weather was lovely because I remember the heat. So my man was like, really, if he wants to go for the summer, he can to walk if you are happy. Like, if I wanted to do it, like, and I said, yeah. And that was it. Mitchelstown Cottage becomes my home, basically. Permanently. I don't think I ever really grieved me that dying. I don't think I've had the chance. I think I remember the day I got back. I remember the Bradleys and that came up. They come to the sitting room, I'm in the sitting room and I'm watching the telly. They all come up and pay like what their condolences or whatever. The way they do it in the fucking movies. All come up saying, well, sorry for your loss and all that. Marlo sent his wishes and all that crap and all pretending they gave a fuck. Saying I'm sorry that your dad died and so on. But after a couple of days then it was back to normal. That's when everything goes into motion. This big empire, this fucking, this master plan Brian had.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.